This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to Postcards from the Edge. I'm your host, Christopher D. Littlefield, and with me this week is Christos Generis. Christos, thank you for coming on Postcards.
Thank you for having me.
This is the first time you've been on the show, so why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and share your Trek story with us?
Sure. I want to say my earliest memories of Star Trek were probably being about 5-6 years old. The Wrath of Khan. I want to say I may have seen a original series in there, but it was my dad that exposed me to Wrath of Khan. And myself and my younger brother, believe it or not, because I was only about 5 or 6, we were obsessed with the Reliant and the Enterprise and the space battle. And we used to draw the ships and hang them on the wall. And that's what we were doing. My other kids were drawing other stuff. And from there, Star Trek 3, Star Trek 4. And then I think I really came into my own with Star Trek The Next Generation, which premiered when I was 10. So I like to think of that as my Star Trek because that ran first run from when I was 10 to 17. Talk about your formidable years. And I had Star Trek The Next Generation, watched it religiously every week from the beginning, was devastated when season 2 started and Dr. Crusher was gone. And I remember being about 11 years being devastated. And it was my Trek. I pretty much have not lost track of Star Trek ever since. There might have been a few years in the mid-90s when I went off to college that after TNG, but early seasons of Voyager and mid-DS9, where I may have stopped for a while, but I definitely have made up for lost time.
Yeah, I didn't realize how similar our Trek stories were, because my dad also got me into it with the original series films, and then TNG is when I kind of blossomed into my Trekkerness.
Yeah, it's rather amazing to me, our story there, how many men of a certain age have had that same background, especially gay men of a certain age. Just like it was right. All of TNG, and that's what we had in high school, college years, and it's just a common denominator for so many people.
What do you mean of a certain age?
Well, I mean, I'm in my early 40s.
Yeah, same.
So it's like, for me to be at that age 10 when Star Trek Next Generation premiered, that puts me into my 40s. So it's like,
Oh, wow. That's how old we were when it premiered?
10 years old. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's like, you look back at, so it's amazing to me that something that started for me when I was 10 is still such a major part of my life.
Wow, that really puts interesting perspective on it.
Yeah, no, it's like, because that's why I was kind of saying those formidable years, 10 to 17, think about that. It's kind of like, you're writing so much of who you are as a human being during those years and who you're going to become.
That's true.
So I want to say maybe some good morals and ideals got instilled in me thanks to Star Trek. And, that's why we're all such upstanding human beings now.
I love that. And listeners, just so you know, Christos is a Crusher gal. So Crusher is your goddess, right?
Yes, and I will mention her any chance I get.
Right. And you and I met at Star Trek Las Vegas this summer.
That's correct. On like day one too. So it was
That's right. Yeah. And we're gonna talk about the scans just a little bit more, because I've been talking about it a lot on the podcast lately, because I just feel that they need to be covered more, and that listeners need to be exposed to what they are.
Yeah, definitely. I think they're bringing some scamps back in the next season, I heard. I don't know if I heard that rumor right.
I believe
right.
so.
Discovery. So that would yeah. be cool.
And you were the one that put me in my first scant.
Oh.
Remember?
Right, that's right.
Yeah, we had like a mini fashion show. I was like, I got to try that on. And I did. And do you remember I did like a little photo shoot in my hotel room before I wore it the next day?
Well, it was kind of interesting how big they were this year. But it's a thing.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Yeah. Well, today we're discussing the fan response to the short treks Ask Not. If you would like to participate and share your response, please post your comments in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Type B-A-B-E-L into the search field and it will come right up. We'll create a special postcards discussion thread right before each new Star Trek episode. Leave your comments and they just might get read on the air. As of this recording, we have 42 comments on the postcards thread, which is a 16.66 repeating percentage increase from our last episode. Listeners, keep the comments coming because we love your feedback. Please keep in mind that some comments might be edited for time.
With all that math for Amy Nelson?
It is. I'm continuing to do it in her honor. She's the previous host of this podcast, and I told her that I would continue doing it.
Got that. All right. I got to have brunch with her last week in Las Vegas. So.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's so cool. I saw the pics on Facebook.
Star Trek Las Vegas family.
Yeah. All right, listeners, let's get it started. And please bear with us, we did experience a little audio difficulty during this recording. James Deuce says, I freaking loved this one. After the disappointing episode that was The Trouble with Edward, this was like a complete 180. It's the first short trek that I have every intention of rewatching soon, like within the next 24 hours.
Yeah, that's... It was a very exciting short trek, and it was a very, very short trek, under 10 minutes.
It was the short trek. It was the shortest trek.
Yeah, it was a little 10-minute, 9-minute, or deal. But yeah,
not quite 10.
It was very fast-paced, action-packed, and still I feel like we got to see a lot.
Yeah, and you didn't like The Trouble with Edward as much?
No, because I hated Edward, and I know that's kind of probably part of the deal. You're supposed to hate Edward, but... I feel like, are you kidding me? This whole thing with Tribbles was really one stupid guy's arrogance that caused all this drama, you know? So
I didn't like him either.
Yeah, I didn't like him, and I didn't like how far-fetched it was. Like, I totally feel like somebody like him would have been, rooted out of Starfleet a lot sooner in his career.
Oh, yeah. But, some listeners actually liked him but didn't like the captain. And I was the complete opposite. I loved her.
Yeah. I loved her, too. And I feel like I would have been her.
Yes.
And, it's like funny. I liked the ship. But I also was like, whatever happened to the fact that nacelles had to be away from the saucer due to, radiation and things like that. You know what I mean? Like, that's why nacelles have all been kind of off. And up on the struts away from the Enterprise, or I'm sorry, any ship. So that kind of bugged from a nerdy point of view, just a real technical, wait a minute, it's not supposed to be that way. That's somebody not knowing their stuff, so.
Well, you're better at those things than I am.
I had that technical manual when I was young.
I think I had it, but I didn't really pay attention to that part as much. Andrea Boot says, Pike is back. More reasons to love him in this episode. Loved seeing him in the mentorship role with the young cadet. I knew he was the best of the best in terms of Starfleet, but this episode just screams this is why. Number one and Spock cameo at the end. Yes, Pike was back. We got a lot of him in this one. We got some more Daddy Pike.
Daddy Pike, yes. And I gotta say, after three short treks in a row, which he's been in all three of them, believe it or not, even just briefly in the Tribble one. And I think briefly in the Spock one as well.
At the very end of Q&A on the bridge.
But I keep on feeling like we keep getting teased this this Enterprise show with Pike that I have a feeling we're going to get. I think this is all if anything, maybe they're we built these sets, we better use them. So we're going to do a few short treks. But still, They continue to flesh out these characters. And now if you think about it, we just got another new character introduced
right
in this Short Trek.
Cadet Seydoux.
So we're like, you know, we're casting the show with Short Trek. So, you know.
Yeah.
I have a theory. You want to hear it.
What's that?
I don't think the Section 31 show is going to happen. I think it's been a long time since we've heard anything about it. But what I do think is they're going to take the Section 31 storyline and merge it with the Enterprise Pike show. And because if you think about it, Pike did not like Section 31. They totally established that during season 2 of Discovery.
Right.
And I think they're going to set that up to be, you know, part of the quote unquote enemy for him in a Pike show, him dealing with Section 31. So, you know, it's like, you know, because they would all exist in that same universe. You know what I mean? Section 31 still going on there, right. Post-Discovery going to the future. And you still got Pike there, post-Discovery going to the future. So I think you can make that one show. And I have a feeling that's what we're going to end up getting.
I love that theory. I am excited. I was excited about the possibility of a Section 31 show, but it does kind of feel like it's on the back burner now. And, you know, we'd need to get away for we need to have a way for Georgiou to get back to, you know, where the rest of Section 31 is, because she's on Discovery right now and they just jumped into the future.
Yeah. And she is seen, and I believe in the season 3 trailer. So she is there.
Yeah. I'd be okay with that. I think if I had a choice to get a Section 31 show or a Pike Enterprise show, it's an easy answer.
Yeah, if I had to choose, I definitely would choose the Pike Enterprise show. But, you know, it would be cool to see some of those elements of Section 31 included in a Pike
right
show. So,
or included in everything, included in Discovery and in the, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, Discovery's maybe gone now. You know, I think, right? You know, so it's going to have its own thing.
Yeah.
Liam Smart, I'd say this is the best short of season 2 and the second best short overall. Calypso is still the bottom, Chris. I can't say that I thought it was a simulation from the outset. I got distracted by the fact that the Tholians were the aggressors, and I so desperately wanted to see the Tholians on screen again. So did I.
Me too.
But I did think it was fishy that Pike was acting the way, given that we have seen him in Disco and heard of his nature from number 1 in Q&A. I just didn't think how it was fishy. I like the comment about vengeance should never be a factor of war, paraphrased. And also citing the regulation made me feel it was we were in a moot court. Definitely started to feel like that. They were just like totally like throwing the rules back at each other.
Right.
And you know, that was funny. And trying to like, I like her. I don't like loopholes.
I loved that.
Okay. So I will say I thought that was a simulation from the start.
I did too.
Yeah. I was like, this is a Kobayashi Maru kind of thing.
Yeah.
Although I will say that I thought it was weird that they did that explosion and hurt her in the beginning of it.
Oh, wow.
Like, what simulation explode and throws her to the ground? And that's a simulation? I mean, what if she could have got hurt?
Right.
I don't know. I just thought that was fishy to me, but anyway.
I'm going to save my comments about the fact that it was a simulation for the questions and concerns section.
Okay.
But I did also really want to see the Tholians, and I didn't know what a moot court was. I had to DM Liam and ask him.
Yeah.
That it's what law students, it's the fake court that law students use, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that was new to me. Duncan Barrett. Hi, Duncan. Said, I enjoyed seeing Grumpy Pike. Felt like a nod to Jeffrey Hunter. This short trek didn't do a huge amount for me overall, though. It was fine, but I feel like the season 1 shorts made more of the opportunity than these ones have so far. Looking forward to the animated tardigrade. These, with the exception of the tribbles, feel almost more like long-deleted scenes than short stories to me. I don't really mind as long as they have something to offer, but I do feel they could be more ambitious. My favorite short trek was Calypso because it totally exploded what I thought could be done with that format. So interesting that we have Calypso being on the bottom for Liam, and then it's Duncan's favorite.
Yeah, that is interesting. I feel like the first set of 4 short treks that we got between season 1 and 2 of Discovery, all of them, with maybe the exception of the Harry Mudd, were foreshadowings of things that happened in season 2. You kind of,
right.
really, the one with Saru, Brightest Star. I mean, that totally helped you watch the Saru episode. And the one with Tilly, that totally helped at the end of season two when the princess comes on board. With Poe. And even Calypso, while seeming totally outlandish, totally foreshadowed Discovery's jump to the future.
Right.
And the AI becoming part of the ship. So we really didn't see that. It really made no sense at all until literally the last part of the season. But here in our second season of shorts, they really are, I feel like, just filling in some character backgrounds and some story holes here and there. So it's a little bit different strategy so far, although we still have three more shorts to go.
And the episodes seem to be a little bit more self-contained and a little more experimental.
Yeah, that very true. Like, you know, like that the turbo elevator, geez, that's a Star Trek violation. The turbo lift one, that was totally experimental. I mean, this, it's just, we're seeing Spock's first day on the Enterprise. We got number one's, first name finally, and and her love of musical theater. I felt like that so far, I was going to say that's one of my favorite shorts so far.
Q&A?
Yeah.
Me too.
Q&A. And I did really enjoy the Saru episode in season one.
Oh, yeah.
The short treks.
I can't really put the season two ones in the same, if I'm ranking them from favorite to worst, I can't really put season two in the same ranking system as season one because they're so different.
Yeah. And it's really hard to tell because they're really, the first season was really Discovery focused.
Right.
Season two of Short Treks has been very Pike Enterprise focused, really.
Right.
And so it feels like we're watching a whole different show where, I mean, Short Treks are supposed to be, kind of independent. They're not necessarily Discovery or anything like that. I believe the last Short Trek of the season is supposed to be a Picard Short Trek.
Right.
So, so they are kind of getting to that all over the place. And maybe we're starting to see the format really take shape and that it can just go anywhere in the Star Trek universe just to give us another story and more insight.
Mm-hmm. And I like, Duncan, that you said Grumpy Pike felt like a nod to Jeffrey Hunter. That's cool.
Yeah.
I can see that. Oh, what did you think about the mask that he wore at the beginning? Because I'm going to say it's a little kinky, right?
A lot kinky.
Am I the only one? Yeah.
I watched it with somebody else and he said the same thing.
Yeah, I dug it. It was like Pike in a gimp mask or something, from Pulp Fiction.
Yes, definitely.
So maybe that's a Tarantino hint. I doubt it.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, have you seen the news today?
Yeah,
new director and writer for Star Trek 4, which kind of leads me
in the Kelvin timeline.
So it leads me to believe that Tarantino may not be happening anytime soon.
Right, I'm okay with that.
Me too. All right, moving on. Chris Chaplin says, "I appreciated how much character work we got in less than 10 minutes. Its pacing can only be described as abrupt from start to finish, but as the finest short stories do, it leaves the characters in a new world or state without completely telling the audience what exactly will come next. I hope to see this cadet again along with Pike and the rest." Ooh, well, so Chris, another Chris here, he kind of very, very similar to what I was saying about, it being a very fast-paced 10-minute deal, but definitely thinking he'd like to see more of that cadet in a Pike show. So good comments there from Chris.
Yeah, I liked her. And Justin Ozer said, "I loved this episode. In less than 10 minutes, we get great character development, drama, wonder, and so much more. Anson Mount is always amazing as Captain Pike and Amrit Kaur as Cadet Thira Seydoux." I don't think I'm saying her name right. "Is fantastic. I've loved all three short treks so far and can't wait for more. I see others saying they knew it was a simulation right away, but that thought didn't even enter my mind until Pike said so. I've had this kind of thing happen before where I don't catch on to something others see. I think that can enhance the experience for me if I don't know where it's going. This also seemed like a lead-in to a Pike show, and that Cadet Seydoux would be on that show. I now think it's really likely we'll have a Pike show announcement soon, and I hope that's the case. This episode is a nice callback to the TNG season one episode, Coming of Age. Love how deep they're going for some of these references.
Oh, I think Justin's been drinking some of the same Kool-Aid we have.
Yeah, we are all drinking the same Kool-Aid. I haven't heard anyone say that they don't want a Pike show.
And isn't that amazing that so many fans want that? I mean, it's you know, it's not very often that you get the Trek world and fandom to be in agreement about something. You know, I mean, really, there's some of the best stuff is hated by some and some of the worst stuff is loved by others. And,
yeah.
But everybody seems to like Pike and his integrity as a captain. I feel like he is Star Trek. And to quote Admiral Cornwell, he is the best of Starfleet. So if I paraphrase that.
And these people know what they're doing. They're smart.
Yeah, very much so. All right. I'm going to thank Patrick up front for his short one. Patrick Carlin says, the regulation 191, Article 14 that Pike cites is the same one that Janeway quoted to Ransom in part one of Equinox. Hashtag Voyager references FTW. Right. First off, I'm going to say FTW.
For the win.
For the win.
Voyager references for the win.
I'm awful with acronyms.
I had to think a second too.
Yeah. I'm getting better. But yes, that is awesome that we're doing little things like that to say, you know, one little line that's in the, you know, Discovery era is referencing Voyager, which is toward the very end of what we've seen so far on screen. You know, 100 plus years difference there between those stories being told, but they're quoting the same regulation. So yes, and since we're talking Voyager, Admiral Janeway for Star Trek Picard, please.
Yes, please. And those little references that are put in are such like little love notes to the fans, like the diehard fans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was thinking that, too. It's like, you know, you can tell either A, the writers really, you got some writers who really love Star Trek for one. And B, they care enough about the fans to tie that together. And that's where, you know, all these people that are, you know, the whole Discovery isn't canon. I'm like, that's not. I mean, they do all this little weaving to pull like, even Voyager into it. You know, Tholians, which we saw in Enterprise and in the original series. We're talking Tholians. I mean, just all, and that's all in one episode. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you get a little bit of I don't know, Kobayashi Maru effect going on here with the simulation. I definitely thought that. So, I mean, in a 9 to 10 minute story, I mean, there's a lot of,
yeah,
a lot of, you know.
We love an Easter egg, don't we?
Yes.
Paul Wright Jr. says, great little story. I didn't catch on to the simulation either, surprisingly. I loved all the deep cut references. Anyone else catch the reserve activation clause, which was also used on McCoy in Star Trek The Motion Picture? See, there's all these references.
You mean I was drafted?
Yeah. I didn't catch it when I watched it, but I'm glad that you pointed it out, Paul.
Yeah, definitely. I caught it, and it is one of my favorite lines from Star Trek The Motion Picture, which, by the way, I just have come to love more.
Oh, I know.
The older I get, when I rewatch it. I loved watching the 40th anniversary a month or two ago in the theater, and I'm really hoping we get this 4K cleanup to the movie that they were talking about. So it'd be nice to see if we see that next year.
That'd be awesome.
All right. Let's see here. Joshua DeVries says, I see Starfleet's tradition of using emotionally traumatizing situations to test cadets and young officers has a long history. With that said, I like this one, even if it was super obvious that it was a simulation. The rapid fire exchange of Starfleet's regulations was so well choreographed and edited. It was like a fencing match. I hope we see Cadet Sidhu again. See, more love for the cadet. And yes, that was pretty awesome. I mean, if anybody was taking a test, I would say you passed just by being able to quote so much Starfleet regulation on the fly and in such a stressful situation.
Oh, yeah. That's good for the career to be able to do that. Nicholas Paul Collinson said, this was good. I really liked seeing Anson Mount again, and the character of Cadet Sidhu was really good. I'm sure everyone has already mentioned that the test is really emotionally traumatizing, but it's nice that they at least try to lampshade that in the text. I caught on that it was a test only a few seconds before the other shoe dropped, so that was nice. I'm really excited for the two animated shorts now. Can't wait to see our Astra Tardigrada Prototaxidae friend again. Did you catch that in the preview, the animated tardigrade?
Yes, I definitely saw that. Yeah, the animated is going to be, I'm taking it, we're getting two animated stories in one short. So I hope it's a little longer and we're not just going to get 2 6-minute deals or something, or 2 7-minute deal shorts, or maybe 2 10-minute shorts would be nice. Maybe they owe us a little bit for this short Q&A.
Yeah, we're shortchanged.
But anyways, definitely, kind of funny, people are, they either figured it out or they figured it out last minute or they didn't figure it out at all, but it's still that no matter what I'm seeing here is it didn't affect people's ability to enjoy it.
Well, we'll get there.
Let's see, their next one is from Danny Brown. I love this short trek. I think it's more of an inkling that we might get a Pike series. And if we do, I'll be more excited for the fact that I am for Picard, because my first and biggest love is for TOS. My dad showed us the series growing up. Ah,
I know. I love that, Danny.
Yeah, I love that so many people can just say, you know, my parents, my dad, my, you know, whoever showed me Star Trek. And it really, you know, so many people had a problem with Star Trek The Next Generation when it first came out, which is why I don't think too much about people talking about Discovery the way they do.
Right.
But Star Trek Next Generation really did become the next generation Star Trek. And, you know, it really was like passing the torch from one generation to another. And I think that's why Star Trek has now made it 53 years, you know, because it does continue to stay relevant and pass itself on and reinvent itself. And
yeah. Really, people are saying the same things about Discovery that they said about TNG too, if you really boil it down.
Yeah. My favorite is there's a newspaper article that goes around on Facebook from time to time that was published while TNG was in initial production but had not premiered on TV yet. And it was talking about how mad the fans were. And they're introducing all the actors that are going to be on Star Trek The Next Generation. And almost like they're like not even welcome. Like, you know what I mean? It's like... there's a big picture of Jonathan Frakes and LeVar Burton and Cheryl McFadden, who was still using her real first name at that point.
That was the TV Guide article, right? Maybe? Or The Sun or something? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a clip that gets shared on Facebook and it makes its way around and comes back right. A lot.
Yeah, I've read that. It's pretty brutal and there are inaccuracies in it too.
Yeah, yeah. But people loved it from day one for the most part. It's shaky as season one and two could be at times. People liked it from day one. It was, you know, and it really just kept getting better. So,
oh yeah,
I feel like the same way with Discovery. It just kind of keeps getting better.
Right. I agree. Well, let's move on to your questions and concerns, listeners. James Gunther said, I liked it, but isn't Starfleet all about using loopholes for the right reasons? How can Starfleet afford to test everyone like this? And wouldn't people catch on after a while? Great, they're testing me again. Play along. I can see that.
I definitely can see that too. And does the captain have time to do that for every cadet that comes on the ship? Maybe it's the cadets being tested, maybe. Because, you know, I think in Discovery, I want to say that's the first time I even considered that cadets were even allowed on starships on active missions when we first got introduced to Tilly.
To Tilly.
Yeah. And I'm like, wait, she's a cadet. Why is she on? She's not even graduated Starfleet yet. So why is she on the bridge of a ship? So I think this is a slight, in my opinion, and I could be wrong. I'm sure we'll hear about it later. But I think this is the first rewrite of canon here where cadets are on ships. So maybe in the Star Trek world, it is a very limited thing that cadets are on ships. And in that case, they are tested this way. Because other than that, you know, everything else we've ever seen in Star Trek has been you go to Starfleet Academy, you graduate Starfleet Academy, now you're an ensign, and you get your first posting. And it's normally not on the bridge of a, I think Wesley Crusher might be the only person. He was an acting ensign, not a cadet.
That's true.
When he was on Enterprise. So, I mean, When did we ever see cadets serving on any of the ships?
Well, we didn't, but was it ever said that it doesn't happen? That's the question.
Well, and that's why we don't necessarily can say, well, it's not, they changed, or, you know, they retcon this, you know what I mean?
Right.
So we can't quite go that far unless somebody else knows of something that we don't. But yeah, I don't think it's retconning, but I do think it's definitely going into an area that we've never been shown before.
Yeah.
And maybe Starfleet stopped it for a reason. Maybe it was one of those years where it's like, we used to do this and then a cadet really messed up bad and we said, no way, this is over.
And then maybe they agreed to never talk about it again.
Yes. That Tilly, she messed up bad. So Brandon Shea Mutala says, I enjoyed this, but I really felt like it struck a bad note when Pike was the one revealing it was a simulation. Like, would that just be another tactic he could be using? The cadet sure gave in quick. And yes, I realized we heard number one over the comm system and he took his cuffs off, but I just think somebody else should have walked in and explained the situation. I really enjoyed the short trek though, and it's my favorite of season two. Point, yeah. But they didn't like the whole shaking of the starbase, like the attack stopped and everything too.
Yeah, and there's like chatter outside the door.
Red alerts are going on, klaxons are blaring, and that all stopped. So, I mean, I guess I would stop too. And he took his cuffs off, and number one came over the comm. So, yeah, I think it's all right.
I'm sort of with Brandon on this one because I didn't like the fact that they did that to her. And I felt like it was really manipulative. I get that it's a military operation, and we actually talked about this in the chat and on the live podcast that dropped right after a few days after the show aired. And it just rubbed me the wrong way that they were manipulating her and using her love for her husband, her relationship with her husband. And I just didn't like it. I thought it was, I think abusive is too hard a word, but I just felt like it wasn't nice, and it totally turned me off that they did that to her the first time that I watched it. The second time I watched it, I liked it a little more, but there's still that kernel in my mind that just felt, haha, just kidding, your husband's not gonna die, it was all a trick.
They physically hurt her. They blew a console up and blew her onto the floor, and she was stunned, almost, you know, with immobile for a few moments. So it's more than just manipulating her and messing with her mind. I mean, they hurt her, you know what I mean? And it's a little bit, you know, I don't know. You know, maybe they had a doctor standing by, I don't know, but yeah. It did seem a little weird. I thought that part is the really kind of hard to digest part of the whole thing.
Yeah. Janessa Quijada says, this is a first. A short treks I'm kinda underwhelmed by, and I'm more excited for next month's animated treks. I mean, I get what the writers were trying to do in Ask Not, but it felt kinda like a long promo cutscene for the next Star Trek tie-in computer game. I pegged the entire story as being a simulation early on. The evil dungeon master in me wanted the end simulation bit to be a fake-out, and that it wasn't over when Pike said it was. That said, all the actors did a wonderful job. I just wish I could feel stronger about it. On to the next trek. Interesting comment, Janessa. Thank you.
Yeah.
I like that there's an evil dungeon master in you, Janessa, and I kind of already knew that.
It's kind of, kind of 2 points to make here. It's, people are excited for these animated treks. And I guess, you know, it's been about 45 years since Star Trek, the animated series.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I guess that would make sense that people are excited.
And did you see the side-by-side screenshot comparison of the Enterprise from the original animated series to the shot we got in the promo?
I did see that.
That was so beautiful.
Yes, and it's cute. I mean, I liked both, and I mean, I really enjoy the Disco Enterprise. I know some people had some heartburn about that, but I really enjoy the aesthetic of the Disco Prize. I feel like
it
takes the original classic prize and takes. My favorite ship in Star Trek is the refit of the original Enterprise. You know, Star Trek: The Motion Picture, and the A that we see after that.
Uh-huh.
That's my favorite ship. And I feel like the Disco Prize takes some really takes some elements from that Enterprise and blends it nicely with the original classic Constitution class Enterprise. So
I can see that. I remember learning that about you, or I think you told me that at STLV that you really liked the refit. And I was kind of surprised because I haven't really heard anybody ever say that before.
Oh no, there's a lot of refit fans out there.
Yeah. I guess I just haven't been exposed to those opinions, but I like that there's a particular group that really likes it, because there's also a group that doesn't really like it.
Yeah, true. And I think the refit Enterprise is like my first Enterprise, I guess, with Wrath of Khan being my first Star Trek. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
That's true for me too. All right, listeners, let's get to your last words.
Karen Chupless says, it was too short. Not really. It was long enough for the story. I just want more. Boy, I really have my fingers crossed. I can't see why you'd go through the expense of CGing in that engineering room for that short a trek when a walk and talk would have been done. Makes me think maybe there are plans. Karen, we agree with you. More love and support for a Pike Enterprise series.
Mm-hmm. And those sets...
That engineering room.
Oh, it's huge. It's very different from the TOS engineering room, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And I think that I do agree that they wouldn't go to the expense of making such a detailed CGI and the sets too, which do not look temporary to me. Brian Malosh says, I saw how short it was, but when the story seemed to be wrapping up with enough time to do it, I found myself waiting at the end for a Star Trek Pike announcement. And here we are again. I was disappointed when I realized that it was not going to happen. My two criticisms were, one, Pike mutiny? Not buying it. So I was suspicious from the get-go. Two, too short. Come on! Let's stretch this short trek to 2 hours. Judging by the sneaks for the two animated short treks at the end of the episode, I guess none of these short treks are Discovery-related. Well, Enterprise-related, but not Discovery-related. I am guessing that means we'll be getting another round of short treks in between Picard and Discovery that will be more Discovery-oriented. I'm guessing by the engineering set that we will see more of Pike, Spock, and Number One, with either a Pike announcement coming soon or integration into the Section 31 series. Well, it looks like someone else
Brian
has the same idea that you do, Christos.
Brian is a smart man. He has got it figured out.
You're both smart men.
Yeah, like, he's right. I mean, that could have been the perfect drop for, coming soon, Star Trek, whatever. The mutiny. Wasn't buying it either. It definitely felt like, but you know, it's kind of funny though, because you can like still suspend, you know, with all the things that those little things, I still think the story was so good. And then you just kind of kept going with it that you're able to, you know, keep with it, you know what I mean? And overlook those little things.
Yeah. I didn't need 2 hours of that though. Because I just, you know, this was not my favorite short trek, and it goes to the premise of them tricking her. And again, I get it. It's a military, it's an operation, and they're testing her, but I just still, I don't like it. I'm uncomfortable with it. Christos, how do you think the fans responded to this episode?
I think even the fans who had issues and the fans who really loved it, they were still all kind of saying the same thing, which is I think they like it. And this just continues to, you know, keep beating this drum, strengthen the case that a fans want a Pike Enterprise driven series, that there's consensus and agreement in Trekdom that we would want this show and that it would work well. There is a lot of chemistry with Number One, Spock, and Pike, and the sets are beautiful. The ship is beautiful. It's like you've built this whole universe. Let's just run with it.
Yeah.
Not sure where the plans are with, you know, CBS All Access, but you know the plans were or continue to be that they want something new pretty much every week of the year in the Star Trek world. Mm-hmm. So you know if you're going to do 10 Picard episodes and 12 or 13 Discoveries and some animated Trek in there with the Lower Decks, there's still room for more, and maybe Pike is our more. Even if they did a limited run, I think, you know, give us one 10 episode series, or hey, you know, even a TV movie or two, you know, a couple of two-parters. I don't know. There's room to tell more, and I think that's what the fans definitely want. And I think CBS should listen.
I think they will, and I think that sometimes people are listening to these podcasts. So it is you guys who are listening, who are somehow connected to the franchise. It's clearly the right thing to do. You know, it's just so evident.
And if you need anybody to work on these shows, we're available.
That's right. I am a musician.
I am very opinionated, and I will tell you if your scripts are good or not. How about that?
So like every other Star Trek fan.
I don't know. I feel like they don't consult fans enough sometimes when they're doing these things. I mean, we could have been, say, Insurrection had they just brought a few fans in.
Listen, I love Insurrection. I really liked it. And Donna Murphy, come on. She is so radiant and earthy. And
she is no replacement for Beverly Crusher.
She's not, but she's fantastic.
She's fantastic, but they turned her into... Here's the problem with Insurrection. It's a TV episode level story. Donna Murphy is your female Vash of the week.
Oh, no. You know,
it's your two-parter that's condensed. You know, it's like Time's Arrow level. You know, it's not this epic
Vash
story that falls... Oh, maybe the... What's her face? The one that dies in the fires, or almost dies in the fire. The one they play with the musician with.
Oh, I love her. She doesn't die. I can't remember her name, but I love her.
Yeah, she's more equivalent. She's more equivalent to Donna Murphy. But Insurrection is a TV level story. It is not a worthy successor to the epic story that was First Contact. And it's literally, you know, by not having Brannon Braga and company come back and write the next movie, you know, they just basically killed the Star Trek Next Generation movie franchise, and then only put the, you know, and it was too much damage done for Nemesis to recover it from, let alone Nemesis having some of its own problems. So
right.
Not that Insurrection is a terrible story. It's just not a motion picture level story.
I do agree with that. I think it's an episode. It's a really long episode.
Yes.
And
yeah,
I don't think it's a bad one. It just is not an epic film. Yeah.
And you know, I mean, you see, and of course you have the Bad Admiral. I mean, that's one thing that gets really old in Star Trek sometimes, is the Bad Admiral.
The Bad Admiral.
You know?
Yeah.
Bad Admiral, yes, I've heard that term.
Be sure to check out our Discovery and Short Treks coverage. Live from the Edge for each new Short Treks will air after the episodes on Thursdays, so you can watch Brandy and Bruce and ask questions live, and will be released as a podcast the next day. Our commentary will be available as Tracks from the Edge with Mike and Max. And of course, you can catch full analysis on the Edge main show. You'll find all of these in the main feed for the Edge and in the Trek FM master feed. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Discovery, and the best place to do that is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, where I will collect your feedback for postcards. You can also find us on Twitter at TrekFM, or send us an email using the contact form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the Edge. Christos, it was so fun having you on Postcards and talking about the Short Treks with you today. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. It was a great time.
Yeah. Let us know where people can find you on the interwebs.
You can find me on Twitter at GreekGuySD, and on Instagram at GreekGeek_CG, my initials.
Nice. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CD Littlefield, and of course, lurking in the Babel Conference. I also have my first documentary available on Amazon now, so if you guys want to check it out, it's called Leonard Soloway's Broadway. I'm the music supervisor and composer for it. If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows going and even become an associate producer, visit patreon.com/trekfm for all the details. I'd like to thank our associate producers, Norman Silau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Puleo, Lisa Slack, Shoaib Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Maylett, Chris Tribuzio, Brian Malosh. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially The Edge. Join us very soon for another episode of Postcards from the Edge, right after the next animated Short Treks, Ephraim and Dot and the Girl Who Made the Stars, is released. Hailing frequencies open. Oh, man. That's a whole nother podcast, Insurrection. I will say my opinion on Insurrection has evolved quite significantly since it originally came out, and that I actually really love the storyline. I love the plot. I love the acting. I just don't buy Tom Hardy as a Picard clone. That's my only issue, and no disrespect to Tom Hardy because I think he's amazing. It doesn't work for me because he doesn't look like him.
Wow. That's Nemesis, not Insurrection.
Oh my God. Okay, wait. I can't put that in there. I should just no longer do. I can never watch Star. I just, yeah.